Good morning, everyone. Today, Wednesday, the 560th day of war is better than half over in Europe. And at this time, each weekday morning, we bring you the news Europeans will find in their afternoon and evening papers. First, a report from our staff in England. Go ahead, London.
This is John McBain in London. German raiders last night made one of the most widespread and scattered raids of the war on Britain. 34 separate districts were bombed. All attacks were made by single planes, but some areas had several raids, especially in the Midlands and the Northwest. Two German bombers are believed to have been shot down. Today's communique says damage wasn't heavy. In one northwestern district, buildings were set afire, but all the blazes were out or under control by daybreak. Casualties throughout the country were few. London hit a lot of gunfire and many planes, but only minor bombing was reported, and damage was negligible. The Air Ministry announced today that one German bomber was destroyed on the ground at its French base just before it was due to take off to raid Britain. The British bomber that did the job stayed over the field for 25 minutes before letting the bombs go. The Royal Air Force again bombed the German naval base at Kiel last night. The attack is described by the Air Ministry as successful. One pilot reported a direct hit on a German bomber. The censor allows us to say this morning that Buckingham Palace was again bombed during a recent raid on London. Three bombs fell in the forecourt, where the famous ceremony of the changing of the guard takes place. These caused only broken windows and slight damage. A fourth bomb fell in the North Lodge and completely wrecked it. It was announced this morning that Australian and New Zealand forces have arrived safely in the Middle East from England. Reports of various kinds reaching here from the Balkans today have been extremely optimistic. Opinion in Greece is very firm, and there is no doubt that at this moment the British have done and are doing everything to help them in literally every way possible. Official circles in London today expressed the hope that the Bulgarian authorities, as well as the Turks, would carry out an investigation of the attempt to assassinate Mr. Randall, the former British minister in Sofia. Mr. Wynant, the new American ambassador in London, conferred with Lord Wilton, the food minister, today. They are understood to have discussed the food situation in Britain. Admiral Darlan's threat to convoy French ships through the British blockade is still causing a great deal of discussion in Britain. The Daily Telegraph today says that if carried out, it will mean the direct employment of the French Navy in the service of Germany under the specious guise of saving France from the alleged danger of starvation. The paper points out that an Axis commission in Marseille and Toulon takes a substantial share of every cargo unloaded, except those from occasional American relief ships. So far, the only other ships have come from French North Africa and have made only a negligible breach in the blockade. The Telegraph goes on to say that Admiral Darlan confronts the British with the alternative of either letting ships in from everywhere, and so reducing the blockade to a total farce, or else of risking embroilment with the French Navy. And the paper says, no wonder there is frantic glee in Germany. If Admiral Darlan desires the mitigation of the blockade against occupied France, the paper adds, the way to set about it is to afford us the certainty that not a ton of any cargoes admitted will reach German hands or redound directly or indirectly to the benefit of Germany. France, the French language paper published in London, points out that for 8 months, Germans and Italians have been taking 80% of food cargoes arriving at Marseille, and neither the Vichy government nor the press and radio in unoccupied territory have made any protest. France says that suddenly, when Hitler has need to answer the United States lease land bill, and when French naval bases and the French fleet would give him precious assistance, the Vichy government discovers the blockade and raises the political problem. France also publishes today extracts from letters that have arrived in England from Frenchmen in unoccupied territory. One Frenchman writing from a village in southwest France says, let the British win. We will eat afterwards. A letter from Marseille says that the Vichy government has been requisitioning food in the unoccupied area to help matters in Paris. Between that and the requisitioning done by the Germans and Italians, little remains, says the letter. The writer goes on to say that a few days before, a cargo of codfish had arrived in Marseille, and the boat had no sooner touched the wharf than German cars arrived to take over the cargo. The writer says that the fish heads were sold to the people of Marseille. This is John McVane in London, returning you to the National Broadcasting Company in New York.
This is New York, and now from Rome via the Associated Press, Italian troops were reported today by the Fascist High Command to have captured a British position in the Karen sector of Eritrea, putting the garrison to flight. Next, this morning, a report from our staff covering developments in the Reich. Go ahead, Berlin.
Hello, NBC. This is Theodore Knaut speaking from Berlin. The coming visit of Japan's Foreign Minister Matsuoka is still the chief news in the German press this morning, and the papers are full of biographical accounts of their expected guest and of articles that describe his country and its power. Meanwhile, Germany's ambassador in Tokyo, Ott, is on his way here, and for the next fortnight, Japanese news is likely to loom large in the news here. These March days have always been fateful ones for the Third Reich of Adolf Hitler, for it was in March 6 years ago that he proclaimed the rearmament of the Reich, and 5 years ago that he reoccupied the Rhineland with his troops. 3 years ago, Austria was joined to Germany, and the date is commemorated in the press today with articles and pictures. And 2 years ago saw the end of Czechoslovakia and the creation of the Protectorate of Bohemia and Moravia, the first time that Hitler's Germany brought a non-German people into its orbit. So all in all, the early days of spring have traditionally been an active and a portentous time, and we are waiting to see if this year is going to hold true to form. The passage of the Land and Lease Bill by the House of Representatives, completing the legislative consideration of the bill and sending it on to the President for signature and enactment, is commented on without reserve on the Wilhelmstrasse this morning. No one, the speaker said, would consider the measure a defensive one, and in his opinion it showed up the situation in America in its true colors, for those men who remembered 1917 were relegated to the fifth column, and it was men like Secretary Morgenthau, Mr. Justice Frankfurter, and their like, who pushed the bill through, as an attempt on the part of international Jewry to regain the positions it had lost. The fact that it violates the Monroe Doctrine, in German opinion, was stressed, and the recent alleged offer of a guarantee to Yugoslavia was called upon as evidence of American aggressive intentions. In any event, the effect of the bill was admitted to be to prolong the war, in doing which, however, it only increased America's opportunity to take over the British inheritance, and it was doubtless a good piece of business for the United States. To sum up, the speaker emphasized that the nations joined in the three-power pact are not going to submit to dictation from Washington, as in the case of President Wilson's 14 points, or otherwise. And the coming visit of Matsuoka is going to demonstrate that American and British calculations as to their solidarity are wrong. Germany has figured on every possible contingency. The death of Cardinal Schurter, Archbishop of Cologne, removes a notable figure in German church circles, and reminds us that Germany, always a nation with a strong Catholic population, has become even more so through the annexation of new territory to the east, the south, and the west, all those regions in Poland, Czechoslovakia, Austria, and France being predominantly Catholic. Germany has had four cardinals in recent times, and speculation is rife as to whether the number will be increased or not. German air attacks yesterday were directed chiefly against Birmingham, as well as harbor works in London, Southampton, and Portsmouth, says the German communique today. A merchant ship was hit in an attack north of Scotland, but it is not said that it was sunk. In the Mediterranean, Malta, which has experienced its 400th attack, was bombed once more. The British attacked places that are not further specified in northern Germany last night, doing no military hurt, according to the report, and causing some civilian damage as well as killing and wounding some persons. In the week ending yesterday, 11 British planes in all were destroyed, four of them with certainty on the ground. The Germans, in the same time, lost a total of 9 machines. The distribution of coal next winter, the first indication we have had of planning so far in advance, is going to be on the basis of the winter of 1940, it is announced. So far this year, households seem to have got along comfortably enough, as the winter was a far milder one than the one before, which broke all records for continuous cold. This is Theodore Knaut speaking from Berlin and returning you to NBC.
And that was Theodore Knaut reporting the news in Germany, where it is now 2:10 Wednesday afternoon. Now, Earl Godwin reports from our newsroom in Washington.
Good morning, folks. You know, no country can be good-natured unless it's a free country, and no country is better-natured than the United States of America. Look at the end of the Lend-Lease Bill debate. Finally, when the Lend-Lease Bill in all of its fears and hopes and promises has been enacted. On the House side yesterday, there was immediate declaration of support for the program and the country of the red, white, and blue by the leaders of the one-time opposition. You know, it was not aid against aggression that the losers had fought. It was merely the method. A tremendous House vote finally supported the final presentation of the bill, 371-71. No better American lives than smiling Joe Martin, the Massachusetts Republican leader of his party in the House. No, Joe has fought the bill on the ground that it might lead to war. But amendments lessen this danger now, said he. But anyhow, in a sort of my country, right or wrong, but my country attitude, Joe electrified his colleagues in the House yesterday when he spoke. We live, thank God, said he, in a country where we can debate these great questions and divide as our convictions direct us. But once the decision is reached, we accept the verdict of the majority. We may differ among ourselves, but there's no division in our loyalty to our country or our determination to protect the security of our people. We are one people, an undaunted people, determined that real Americanism shall not disappear from the earth. That was Mr. Martin. The Democratic side of the House sprang to its feet and gave Joe Martin a standing ovation, which was joined in, of course, by his Republican colleagues, and a similar demonstration was given for John McCormick of Massachusetts, the Democratic floor leader, when he seconded Martin's plea for unity. And the last words in this historic debate were spoken by Representative Bloom, Democrat from New York City, chairman of the House Foreign Affairs Committee. Said he, H.R. 1776 is the voice of aroused America sounding the trumpet call for free government everywhere. By this action, the United States gives the lie to the cowardly and defeatist cry that democracy is powerless in the face of aggression. And then they passed the bill. The bill is a law. The first shipments of Army and Navy surplus material are being packed up and will be put aboard ship soon. And the President will now ask Congress for $7 billion of American taxpayers' money yet to be raised. This $7 billion is to pay for the stuff that we will loan or lease or trade to Britain or Greece or possibly China or whoever needs it. And the big job confronting the administration now is to raise the American morale to the point of supporting the whole program wholeheartedly and put a wartime effort in a peacetime program. Because sooner or later, the fact will dawn upon us that $7 billion is going to add about $53 a head to the American tax burden. And the debt limit will reach $65 billion by 1943, so say some of the government experts here. There'll also be a tremendous boost in manufacturing and tremendous boost in employment. And when American mass production reaches its stride in a few months, there will probably be a sight that will astound the world because the genius of American industry is being teamed up to produce as America never produced before. We're inclined to squabble over minor matters here, but in the long view of some of these Washington diplomats and statesmen, it has become known that the one thing that has held back the hands of the Asiatic end of the Axis is the knowledge that this country has the technique and the materials for unparalleled production, and it's on its way. Earl Godwin says goodbye. That's all the news from Washington at this time.
And that's the news at home and abroad at this time. Consult your paper for our complete news schedule. Our regular program schedule will be interrupted for important bulletins. This is the National Broadcasting Company.